NFL draft over the weekend, a lot of hallabaloo and a lot of folks watching and listening to the draft. And a guy that was a part of the draft as well with us prior to the event last week, Sean Zobel, draftheadquarters.com, and joins us on the fan line. Sean, great work as always. How close were you with your draft to what actually happened last weekend?
You know, I don't think anybody was very close. This was by far the most difficult year that I've ever seen in terms of trying to project probably the first round. I think, you know, from top to bottom, it was fun to, you know, try to track the progress of some of these players. And overall, it was a successful year. I think, you know, in terms of projecting certain players in each round, I think I hit on, you know, a handful of guys that I was pretty happy with. Mm-hmm. But the first round in particular is definitely more difficult than I'm typically used to seeing, I guess, in the past.
What, was it more of a shock that Blake Bortles went number three to Jacksonville when we hadn't heard anything, or Cleveland dealing out of the number four spot for Sammy Watkins? And Cleveland, they did the same thing with that. They picked up a first-rounder for next year, too. So I like what Cleveland did in terms of being aggressive and trying to fill some needs.
No, exactly. And, you know, it's pretty funny. I had heard on Thursday night, about a half an hour before the draft, somebody called me and said, hey, Sammy Watkins just walked into Radio City. He thinks he's going to be a Jacksonville Jaguar. And I said, oh, really? And he said, yeah, you know, as of right now, his entire camp thinks that he's going to be a Jaguar. And I go, okay, well, we'll wait and see. And then Blake Bortles goes three. And everybody says, oh, Sammy Watkins is going to go to the Cleveland Browns at number four. And then the Bills trade up. I think, you know, from what I'd heard, Jake Matthews, a tackle from A&M, could have gone to Cleveland. Sammy Watkins could have gone. This was by far the most, I don't want to use the word obnoxious, but in terms of so many different ways of being able to analyze and look at the position groups with each specific team and analyze the team needs, any of these teams, the top 10 to 15 picks, could have gone in two or three different directions, and I think that was what made it so difficult. And then you add in the 100 underclassmen and such a talented draft. This was by far, you know, it was pretty obviously a wild night on Thursday night, and it obviously added a lot of intrigue and, you know, suspense, and it was a fun night. But for somebody that tries to predict it and tries to be accurate with it, it definitely, you know, we had a couple of wrenches thrown into the mix, that's for sure.
How about Johnny Manziel dropping down to number 22, but eventually Cleveland comes a-calling?
Yeah, you know, that was pretty interesting. I'd heard that, you know, Manziel was obviously high on their board to a point. I'd heard that Tampa Bay really liked him. I think Manziel, you know, they said, you know, among the national media that Manziel was kind of like a smoke grenade. Everybody just threw his name out there to try to, you know, get him to get drafted higher than expected so that it would push somebody else down the board. But, you know, I'm not necessarily sold on Cleveland as a great fit for him yet. I think for him, in terms of the offensive coordinator, Kyle Shanahan, it makes a lot of sense because he just worked with Robert Griffin III in Washington. So I think he has a very similar player that he can work with, obviously, in Manziel. Now, with no receivers, it's going to make it a little difficult over there in Cleveland because Josh Gordon's out and Greg Little's probably their best receiver on the roster right now. So, you know, with Manziel, I'd spend the first half of the year redshirting him, honestly. I think it would make sense for me to, you know, attack the next year and a half, trying to build up that receiving core and make sure that you have the right pieces in place around them. They brought in Ben Tate. They drafted Terrence West. They've got two running backs and an established running game to really, you know, be effective there. They drafted a guard or tackle, Joel Bitonio, in the second round. I think they're going to be more of a run-heavy team than a pass-heavy team. But at the same time, you know, Johnny is Johnny, and there's a reason that he sold more jerseys than, you know, Andrew Luck and RG3 combined at this point a couple of years ago. So, you know, it's obviously going to be exciting to see what happens. But I'm not quite as sold yet on the immediate success of Manziel. I think that he still needs a little more polishing, I guess, over the next year or so.
You know, there were so many questions, you know, ranging from Michael Sam to Johnny Manziel to all these underclassmen. Well, there were a lot of underclassmen that didn't even get drafted. Is this a wake-up call? Is this a reality check that maybe some of these kids are not prepared and the complexion of the draft will change next year and kids will think twice about wanting to come out?
You know, I certainly think so. And two of the players that really, to me, stand out are the two cornerbacks from Florida. One's Luchez Purifoy, one's Marcus Roberson. Both of those guys coming into the season, their junior years here in 2013, were considered relatively top prospects at the position because of you know, what they'd done in high school, what they were able to do early in their careers at Florida. Both of them declared. Lucius Purifoy had off-field issues. They both ran 4.6s at the combine. They both went undrafted. So to me, those are two guys where, you know, a guy like Jalen Watkins, their teammate at Florida, declared. He went in the fourth round, 101 overall. I think he should have, I think those two guys should have stayed in school. The problem is with the way that these agents these days and the way that the businesses work, it's almost, these players almost feel like they are forced out the door because the next talent is coming in line behind them. And it reminds me of Alabama, where guys literally are run into the ground because they know if they, sit out with injury that they're going to be passed up on the depth chart because they got another five-star player behind them. These players are almost forced out the door sometimes. Sometimes they have agents with wrong people in their ear convincing them, you know, that they need to declare. So I think ideally you'd have the NFL sit each player down one way or another and be able to explain why they were given a specific grade before the draft, why they shouldn't declare, what they need to work on, and that sort of thing. And those aren't the things that happen right now. When a college player asks for a grade, the NFL gives them a number and says, this is where you're probably going to be drafted. And then half the time the player ignores it, thinking that he's better than that. Mm-hmm. You know, it obviously, you know, Terrence Mitchell, the cornerback from Oregon, he got a late-round grade from the NFL. He said he didn't agree with it. He declared he went in the seventh round after running a 4.6 at the combine. So, you know, sometimes it's just stupidity by some of these kids thinking that they have an ego and that's their own problem. So, to me, you know, if you're going to be that stupid, then that's your own issue. But for some of these guys, they are led, you know, by some agents that have an ulterior motive in terms of trying to make money off them, and that's the stuff that you have to kind of cut out of the business. But there is no right way of doing it, I guess, is that's what I'm trying to say.
So what should these kids do next? The ones that don't get these contracts, the ones that don't have representation, I mean, where do they go from here?
AFL, Indoor Football League, Canada?
Well, you know, for some of these guys, obviously they sign as undrafted free agents. They try to crack the roster and see what they can do going into training camp. For the guys that get cut, they either go to the Canadian Football League, the Arena League, and, I mean, honestly, I'm working for a company that's bringing the first professional rugby league to the United States. So, you know, I'll be honest, I'll probably be in touch with a large majority of these guys that are undrafted free agents here in the next few months. So,
that's interesting.
So, yeah, no, there are other opportunities out there. It's just, you know, for some of these guys that grow up dreaming of playing the NFL, and then they go undrafted, even after being a five-star recruit out of high school, everybody telling them that they're the best thing on the, you know, biggest man on campus. And then when the NFL just passes them by seven times, it's a serious gut punch. And it really obviously humbles some guys, and it forces them to go back to the drawing board and figure out what to do with their lives. Because when you declare as an underclassman, go undrafted, it's, you don't have a college degree to fall back on. And obviously your scholarship is gone because you, I guess, you know, decided that you didn't want it anymore and you went to the NFL. So it's really a tough situation for some of these guys, you know, these 30-odd guys that were underclassmen that declared and went undrafted. It's just really an unfortunate situation.
He's Sean Zobel, draftheadquarters.com. It's a great website. Let's talk quickly. 2015, I assume you've got it on your radar. If the draft were going to be this weekend, we'll be talking about a couple of quarterbacks possibly being the number one pick. You got Jameis Winston, the quarterback, Florida State, and, of course, Marcus Mariota, the quarterback of Oregon. Will one of those two guys be the guy next year?
You know, I think there's a very strong chance right now. I'm very hesitant to say that Jameis Winston is going to be the number one overall pick. With the amount of off-field stuff that he's had going on, I personally wouldn't want to have anything to do with him. I know he's a fantastic talent, but I just – It would be very difficult for me to try to invoke confidence and draft a guy number one or number two overall after all the stuff that he's had going off on off the field. Now, at the same time, he's a terrific talent. He's a two-way, he's a two-sport athlete at Florida State. He could be the next Deion Sanders for all we know. But I think Marcus Mariota is the odds-on favorite right now to be the number one pick. You know, I've actually spent the last 3 days working on stuff for next year, to be honest.
Nice.
There is a lot of talent next year. I think we could see the best running back to come out of the draft since Adrian Peterson with Todd Gurley out of Georgia. There's a handful of, you know, receivers that I really like. Amari Cooper at Alabama. You know, if Doriel Green Beckham had been kicked out of Missouri, he'd be another guy. Nelson Aguilar at USC. Stephon Diggs out of Maryland. You know, there's another Texas A&M offensive tackle that's going to be a top 10 pick next year. The next year's draft is definitely going to be a talented one. I think between pass rushers, receivers, quarterbacks, it's certainly going to be a talented draft. Obviously, it's a little early to, you know, be able to tell you exactly where each specific play.
I want to choke you, Matt.
Vikings with the seventh pick in next year's draft. Who are they going to take?
You know, next year's draft will be a fun one. I don't know if it's quite going to be what this year's draft was, just with the 100 underclassmen that declared. But in terms of having raw talent at quarterback and running back, we could see two of the best players in the country. Marcus Mariota, Todd Gurley, Jameis Winston. Those three are probably going to be the headliners for next year.
All right. DraftHeadquarters.com. Is there still a reason we should be going to your website?
You know, within the next few days, honestly, my goal is to try to put some stuff up there for next year.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be, stuff leading towards next year. But, if you're looking forward to seeing all these players, I guess, that were drafted this past weekend going into the NFL, all my 190 reports are still up there. I've got everything online. So, feel free to take a look at that. And like I said, we'll have stuff for next year coming very soon.
I need to know more, too, down the road about this pro rugby league you're talking about, because we got a big rugby team here in Sioux Falls. They've been around here a long, long time. So that'll have a lot of interest around here.
Well, that's great to hear. I work for a company called Rugby Law here based in Bloomington in the Twin Cities. Our plan is to bring the first professional rugby league, the National Rugby Football League, to the United States with a start date of April of 2015 next year. One of the teams is expected to be here in the Twin Cities where I'm based out of. And we've been working with the new Viking Stadium to make that the first pro rugby compliant stadium in the country. So we've got, obviously a lot of things going on with that. And, you know, like I said, all these guys that came off for this year's NFL draft, we're going to be targeting them and trying to scoop them up as soon as the NFL cuts them to convert them into pro rugby players.
Wow, interesting stuff. Well, we'll be certainly talking to you a lot more down the road there, Mr. Zobel.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
I assume you'll have a website on about that down the road as well?
Yep, absolutely. I'll be sure to send that your way as soon as it's up.
Sounds good. Hey, Sean, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate the time.
Perfect. Thanks again for having me, guys.
There you go.
Thanks, Sean.
Sean Zobel, DraftHeadquarters.com.